tonight, the sort of the edge of theoretical physics where we are right now. The material we're going to be looking at tonight, if you're going to be reading books about this, a lot of these books have just come out or have come out just in the last few years. So this is not historical information like with Einstein and Maxwell and others, although we'll talk a little bit about that. But we're going to end up tonight kind of fast forward. Where do we seem to be right now? So always the big picture. We've been examining the relationship between science and faith, and we're in a section where we're actually talking about science itself and where it seems to be. The premise from our Book of Discipline is that we say that science and faith are complementary, not contradictory. So they complement one in each other. So we're looking at science through the eyes of faith as well as just through the eyes of being human. So today we're going to kind of return to where we were last week, which is the subatomic world, also known as the quantum world. So the very, very, very tiny. And tonight we'll get an idea of just how tiny. We're going to look for what's called the Holy Grail that Einstein spent the rest of his life trying to pull off. He referred to it as a unified field theory, a field that would unify all the different theories. It's also been called the theory of everything, a theory that would unite the larger world of relativity and therefore gravity, because relativity is Einstein's theory of gravity, with the subatomic world of the quantum. So we've had separate lessons about relativity and cosmology, which are in the large world, and then we had a lesson of the quantum, which is the small world. Today, that quest has a name. And the name is quantum gravity. Quantum being, of course, the small world. Gravity, you could substitute relativity there. Gravity being the realm of the large. So uniting Einstein's theory of the quantum with Einstein's theory of relativity. There are a number of theories of quantum gravity. There's a good Wikipedia article you want. There's like 20 of them that are out there. That, and I'm sure there's more than that because probably as many as there are scientists, but there's a lot of different approaches. We're going to explore two, but they're the main two. One's called string theory, and one is called LQG, or loop quantum gravity. These are kind of complementary in the sense that they start from different directions and move. String theory is going to start from the world of the quantum physics and move towards relativity. Loop quantum gravity is going to start with relativity, move towards the quantum. So they're doing the same thing, sorta, moving in different directions, but they also take different approaches. For just a few minutes, let's just go back and sort of walk it forward so we kind of know what we're talking about, how we got to where we are today, and then we'll be looking at these two. For over 200 years, roughly 1650 to roughly 1850, we understood, at least in the Western world, the nature of the universe through the lens of Sir Isaac Newton, his math, his physics, Newtonian physics. We refer to this most commonly as the modern world view. Basically, it's Newtonian. It's also been referred to as the clockwork universe, because if you look like at Newton's math and how he understood the universe, you get the idea that it's like a clock in the way it works. The Newtonian worldview was not based on empirical evidence. It was really kind of for the first time a view of the universe that was purely mathematic in nature. You could then go out and verify it experimentally or empirically, but the theory itself was a mathematical theory. Now, in his theory, Newton made some assumptions about the universe. All theories do that. Einstein assumed some things too. But Newton made some assumptions about the universe. One was that everywhere in the universe, things would work in exactly the same way. Now, we now know that's not true, but Newton assumed that, and that was a working hypothesis. Gravity, therefore, would be the same everywhere. Time and space were the same everywhere. They were absolute. Time was treated as distinct from and separate from space, We refer to it simply as a fourth dimension. Space wasn't something. Space was nothing. We used to use the word vacuum. Space was conceived by Newton as a container inside which matter and energy existed and did what they did. Force and energy also always moved in a straight line. It's just the way that he understood it. All force, all energy, straight lines. Speeds were additive, not relative. When we get to course, when we got to relativity, we realized that was no longer true. Newtonian physics was philosophically what is known as realist, not anti-realist. And in a realist view, you affirm that time and space are objectively real. Was it Scully used to say, the truth is out there? Yeah, reality is out there. It exists with or without our awareness of it. So it's objective, it's independent. The observer stood outside what is observed. Therefore, the universe was an object. It was objective. You could look at it and perceive it. Newton's universe was a precise mechanism. It ran with predictable certainty. That's just where we get the image of the clockwork. But most importantly of all, Newton's physics simply worked. It did what you want a good scientific theory to do. It successfully explained how things worked in the ordinary day-to-day world. And the other thing that you want from a good theory is it predicted how things would behave. It did both. It explained and it predicted. With this physics beginning really in the 1800s, we began to put together and to produce the modern world, the technological world. This is the world that most of us grew up in. But by the mid-1800s, you may remember when we talked about this, the lesson on mathematics. By the mid-1800s, this particular worldview, the Newtonian clockwork worldview, with all the assumptions that Newton had made, was beginning to fall apart. It was getting ragged. There were some things that could not be explained by the Newtonian worldview. And experiments, and in the 1800s was the age of experimentation that tons of experiments were doing. And a lot of them were producing results that didn't make sense in terms of the way Newton viewed the universe. So we have now have empirical data, experimental data that says, well, Newton's laws simply cannot explain what we're finding. For example, it turns out that space was not just a container, as Newton thought, with nothing in it. Maxwell helped us to understand that fields and waves, similar, like those found in electromagnetism, do not exist in an empty container. They exist in what is referred to as a medium. For a while, the word ether was used. That's no longer used, but the idea was is that, you know, if you're going to have light, something has to carry that light, you know, from point A to point B, magnetism, all that too. Space, we were getting to understand, was a medium itself. It was something. It was not nothing. It was something that conveyed energy and visible lines of force. So this is plainly visible in Faraday's famous iron filings deal. Put them on a sheet of paper with a magnet and put a magnet below, and the iron filings line up with lines of force. So even though you can't see it and the space appears to be empty, the space is not empty. There's something there in space. In this case, electromagnetic force. And lines of force were not always straight as Newton said they would have to be. That was one of his assumptions. You can put a bar magnet like that around iron filings and you can see clearly that the lines of force are not straight, they're circular. With both electricity and magnetism, lines of force were clearly circular, no question about it. With Maxwell and electromagnetic theory, the Newton clockwork world began to unravel and fall apart. Beginning with Maxwell, we begin to see that everything is not absolute. By the way, Einstein does not invent relativity. Relativity goes back to Maxwell into the 1800s. We were talking about this earlier. Through telescopes, we can literally peer billions of years into the past. In one case there, one of our satellite telescopes has peered back 13.7 billion years to some events that happened long, long ago. And they see things that simply do not exist anymore, although the light is just now getting to us. Like a star that exploded billions of years ago, which is whenever we see a nova in the sky, that's what we're dealing with. This meant that there is no universal now. Time was relative. Again, this is pre-Einstein. There is no objective God's eye view of the universe. Newtonian physics said there was an objective God's eye view. That's that we're outside of it, we're observing it, and that begins to fall apart. Again, this changed everything. Newtonian physics did not allow for waves or fields that we clearly see demonstrated, or relativity that many people were working on in the late 1800s. Now, fast forward to the early 1900s. Einstein based his work on Maxwell's mathematical view of the universe. Einstein had this very famous quote, "I owe Maxwell more than anyone. I stood on Maxwell's shoulders." So Einstein takes the groundbreaking work that Maxwell had done, and he begins to pursue that. Einstein produced two theories that fundamentally changed the way we understand the world, relativity and quantum theory. This is two of the five papers in 1905, the miracle year. General relativity, the first of the two, also Einstein's theory of gravity, fundamentally reframed our understanding of time and space. Time and space for Einstein were not separate. They're one unified reality known as space-time. Space-time, you might say, is the stuff of the universe. General relativity also said that space-time curves in the presence of matter, which is to say gravity. Again, gravity is an aspect of matter. Space, therefore, was not different from matter. Matter is the material component of space. So everything is kind of linked to each other. Gravity is a field. Specifically, Einstein understood that gravity is an electromagnetic field, an EM field. Gravity is not diffused through space, which is what Newton thought is an attractive force that pulled through space. Rather, gravity is space itself. Hard thing to just wrap your mind around, but you see a picture trying to say that, you know. Gravity distorts space-time, and that allows for the motion that we see with planets. Gravity, in other words, is the material component of space-time, because when you're talking about gravity, you're talking about matter. It's two ways of saying the same thing. Gravity is a component of matter. You don't have matter without gravity. You don't have gravity without matter. So it's the material component of space-time. In the world of relativity, there was no such thing as a force of gravity that pulls. That's Newtonian language. That language is gone. It turns out that there is no separate force called gravity. May remember Einstein's happiest thought, the elevator thought experiment. When you fall in an elevator, you experience weightlessness. You no longer feel the pull, old language of gravity. And when the elevator goes up, gravity increases. You experience what is known as G-forces. So Einstein's happy thought, gravity and acceleration are not two different things. They are in fact the same thing. Two forms of the same thing. Again, not different. In the same way, time is not distinct from space, but is part of something called space-time. the nature of space-time is that it is not flat, but curved. So not only does space curve, space-time curves, which means the time curves. It curves in the presence of matter or gravity. The larger the body of matter, the more mass you have, therefore the more gravity you have, the more it affects space and affects time. Time dilates with mass. In other words, it is relative, which is what the theory of relativity is about, to how much mass is nearby. For example, we know from the space station and experiments done in space, when brought into orbit, you have two atomic clocks that are matched. The further you get away from the Earth, the atomic clock speeds up as it gets further and further away from the mass or the gravity of the Earth. Now, this has some practical implications. Without taking this into account, GPS satellites, which are in orbit, not on Earth, but out, and therefore have less influence by mass and by gravity, if you didn't take this into account, our GPS would not be accurate. According to what I read, it would shift by as much as a kilometer a day. In other words, without taking this into account, GPS would simply be worthless. Within a black hole, which is kind of almost infinite mass, time slows down to the point that it would almost cease. I've never heard that it ceases, but that it would almost cease. Time also dilates with speed, just like sound and light. Today, this is well documented. You may remember the identical twin astronauts who aged at different rates. They were intensely studied for 1 year. One stayed on Earth, one was in space, and we actually could measure the differences. Again, they're small, but they're real. In addition, space-time is not rigid. It flexes and bends with the force of gravity. This is really what makes objects orbit other objects. A smaller, lighter object is going to orbit a heavier object with more gravitational force. This effect was famously measured in a series of photographs that had to do with Einstein's theory of relativity. In 1919, you may remember the eclipse famously demonstrated that Einstein's theory of general relativity was correct. The mass of the sun distorted space-time, shifting where stars appeared. You see two lines here, four sets of double lines, where stars would have been, should have been, and where they appeared to be. This has more recently been confirmed by the Hubble telescope. If you simply use the telescope to look at something it's in the general direction of a very heavy object like a white dwarf, the shift is there. So time and space-time being distorted by that. Now, we have a couple of more recent results of this that were actually very fascinating. In 2004, Gravity Probe B, the famous one that Science Magazine got slapped down for saying that it, quote, proved Einstein's theory of relativity. Well, aside from that, there were a couple of things that came out. It measured two effects of this distortion of space-time while it was in polar orbit. One thing it measured was that the gravity of the Earth caused gyroscopes to precess, big fancy word. Precess has to do with when if something is spinning on an axis, you set up a deal where because of something like gravity, you have a secondary axis comes into play and it makes a conical kind of shape. The short version is that it caused the gyroscopes to change how they function, and they actually could measure this. It was measured at 6,606 milliarc seconds per year. So small, but measurable. We know this today as geodetic drift. Around an object like the Earth that has a lot of mass, it has a lot of gravity, space-time is distorted and instruments can pick this up. The second observation was that the gravity of the Earth drags, this was new to me, space-time around with it. This is known as frame dragging. You can Google these if you want to know more. Frame dragging has been measured at 39.2 milliarc seconds per year. These two, geodetic drift and frame dragging, both of which have been accurately measured empirically, you know, through experimentation, have shown that the gravity associated with the mass of the Earth distorts space-time in its vicinity. All of this predicted with general relativity, just more and more evidence scientifically, experimentally, saying that Einstein, in fact, was right. The math was right. This means that the effects of gravity on space-time have been empirically verified over and over and over again. Black holes, which were once hypothetical objects, have also, but by the way, they emerged out of the math. Stephen Hawking and Roger Penrose were the two who actually got the award for their work on this. Again, they worked out the math of this. Says black holes should be, so they were theoretical objects. Well, we now know that they've been empirically verified. You may know that last year, 2019, a black hole was actually photographed. This is a picture of that. Now, how can you photograph a black hole? Well, you don't photograph the black hole. You photograph as things are pulled into the black hole, energy is shed. And so that's what we're actually looking at. Gravity waves. You may have seen these recently in the last few years. A lot of evidence about gravity waves. Again, these were hypotheticals that came out of the math. And the belief was that they would exist. And what a gravity wave is a profound distortion of space-time itself. Well, these have been empirically verified. It was verified in one experiment. Nobody believed it. But then more and more experiments have verified that. So gravity waves, you know, every so often you'll hear in the news that we've encountered a gravity wave. Two black holes collide. Two neutron stars collided. It takes a lot to make a gravity wave that we can detect, but they do, and we have. Now, that was one side. That's Einstein's theory of relativity. His other major contribution to our understanding of the universe was in the area of quantum theory. Remember, the lesson tonight is about putting these two things together. So here's the second piece. Just as relativity helped us to understand the universe at the large scale, theory of gravity, quantum theory has revolutionized our understanding of what happens at the small scale. We now know that everything in the universe is particularity. It's quantized. That was one of the papers that Einstein's came up with, that light or energy or force doesn't exist in the distinct packets or quanta. That the math said that, and we've since verified that over and over again. This means that both mass or matter and energy, both of them exist, you know, particles, quanta, in distinct packets. This means you cannot divide either infinitely. There's a point at which you cannot go below, and we have distinct units, which, by the way, turns out to be very important. In addition, everything in the universe, it turns, is made up of energy. We're going to talk about this some more. When you get down to the bottom, which is where we're going to be tonight, everything is energy. Matter is an illusion. I'm going to talk about that some more. Even matter, which appears to us to be solid, is merely another form of energy. And from our ability to perceive, it appears to us to be solid, but that solidity is an illusion. Let me just walk through the argument. It's not a hard one. Matter is made up of atoms. Okay, we know that. Atoms are in turn made up of neutrons, protons, and electrons, and other particles in there, little smaller particles, but we'll just go with these for now. Okay, we know that. These, more recent science, are made up of what are called quarks, and a whole host of subatomic particles. For example, if you have a proton, a particle, and it pulls off the side, you've got three different kind of quarks, And those three quarks together make the proton, which is to say, the proton can be divided into smaller pieces. Matter is made up of matter particles. The technical term for this is fermions. You might think of matter as being firm and fermions. That's the way it works for me. Energy is made up of force-carrying particles called bosons. So fermions and bosons. If you look at the chart on the right, look at the upper left quadrant, fermions. You've got leptons and quarks. Bosons on the other side, you've got gluons, photons, things like that. And then you've got properties and interactions that I'm not even going to try to get into. Do not understand it myself. What you see over here in this chart is known as the standard model of physics. This is the great success story of physics for the last century. What is not as well known is that all of these particles, even those that make up matter, are actually made up of tiny bits of energy. When we keep going down, particles become waves. And everything seems to be descriptive more of energy than of things. Quantum physics and the standard model of physics has fundamentally reframed our understanding of matter and energy, just as relativity fundamentally reframed our understanding of time and space. Let me back up here. So, quantum physics, matter and energy, relativity, time and space. Special relativity, or Einstein's theory of gravity, is the theory at the macro or the large level. This is the world of astronomy, astrophysics, stars, galaxies, and the universe as a whole. Quantum mechanics is a theory of reality at the micro level, or the subatomic, or what's called the Planck scale. More about that in a second. But we have a problem, and it is a doozy. It's a problem with our current understanding of the universe. Relativity and quantum theory are the two best theories we have today that enable us to study the universe. Everybody agrees on that in the scientific community. No question about that. The problem is that relativity and quantum theory are fundamentally incompatible. Fundamentally incompatible. The laws of physics that work in our everyday world do not work in the atomic or the quantum world. The laws of physics that work in the quantum world do not work in our world. Physicists will tell you that's a problem. To embrace quantum physics, you had to abandon a lot of our understanding of the world as we've known it. We had to abandon the idea, for example, that waves and particles are different things. And so we replace it now with duality. We have to give up the idea that there's only four dimensions. Some of this math leads us into 10 dimensions, 11 dimensions, 14 dimensions. Again, by the way, these are dimensions that only exist at the quantum level, not in our level. And honestly, they're dimensions that only exist in the math, because that's all we have. And mathematicians hate things like infinities. And therefore, a lot of work's being done, and that number of extra dimensions required for the math to work has actually dropped significantly. Some would say they've got it back down to the four. We had to give up things like causality, cause and effect. You know, this happens that one domino hits the next. We had to give up locality, that things can only exist in one spot at one time. So when we entered the world of quantum physics, everything that made sense in our world ceased to make sense, and we had to go with a fundamentally different physics. Again, relativity and quantum physics contradict each other. Yet the math and the evidence, at least as far as we had evidence, evidence is really hard to get down at this low scale, but the math and what evidence we had said that both were right, at least in their own spheres. And that's the key language, in their own spheres. This meant, and this was the big insight, that the two theories had to be incomplete. Neither theory could be the whole story. Relativity and quantum theory had to be two manifestations of something that was more fundamental. What we needed was a more fundamental physics, a theory that incorporated both relativity and quantum physics. This is what theoretical physics has been pursuing for the last century. This is the holy grail of theoretical physics, a theory that could literally explain everything by uniting relativity gravity with the quantum. Now, we've had some success. Let me back up here just a second, sorry. The result so far of this quest up to today is known as the standard model of physics. It already referenced it, but just want to deal with it a little bit. You can see over here, quarks, leptons, bosons, Higgs boson. What this model has done so far successfully is it unites the four fundamental forces of nature: electromagnetism, the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, and gravity. Now, this is huge. We have success, not we, but the people who work on this have successfully worked out how all these things do together. It also lays out the basic particles and forces that constitute the universe, and it explains how these interact with each other. That's a lot of success. This model was finalized conceptually in the 1970s, and the final experimental piece was confirmed in the year 2012. And you probably remember this. The last piece of the model was the Higgs boson, or field, a mass-carrying particle known as the God particle. That kind of hit the news a little bit. So on our chart to the right out there, we have got the yellow H, the Higgs boson. Today, again, the challenge is to pick up from that point and to move forward with a unified field theory, bring everything under one mathematics. Again, at this point, we're not talking about experimental physics, and we're not talking about empirical. This is all purely math. But again, remembering, math leads the way. Math is predicted. The solution, therefore, would have to come from the realm of pure mathematics. We simply do not have the tools and are not likely to for a long, long time to come to do experiments in this. Currently, it is believed that there are two ways that this could be done. You could either start from the world of quantum physics and work towards including gravity mathematically and therefore relativity and therefore unite the two. This approach is what we mean by the term string theory. String theory starts from quantum and tries to figure out how can we link quantum theory to relativity and to gravity. Or you could start with a world of relativity and work towards quantum physics. This is the approach known simply as LQG, or loop quantum gravity. So in a sense, the task appears to be very similar, opposite directions. Currently, both approaches are being tried. Again, this is all math. String theory, we're going to look at first, then we'll look at LQG. String theory is, again, a mathematical theory that starts with quantum theory and attempts to unite it to relativity. So the key here is, do we have anything in quantum theory that will give us a link into gravity? That's that, which is has to do with relativity. String theory assumes the standard model of particle physics. Let me say it again. String theory assumes all the research that we've done, all the findings that we've done, and that standard model with all those particles, now it assumes that, but it makes a significant change. One significant difference. The point-like particles are replaced by one-dimensional string-like objects. Basically string, vibrating strings of energy. This is what gives string theory its title. You replace particles with string-like objects. These strings are capable of vibrating and stretching. So just bear with me here. It's these strings that constitute the quantum building blocks of matter. We're more inclined to think of particles, elementary particles, but in this theory, all the particles are gone, but everything's still there, but we're thinking of them in terms of vibrating strings of energy. The difference between the fundamental particles and force, here's a good chart. You've got matter. Matter is made up of molecules. Molecules are made up of atoms. Atoms have nucleuses, neutron, proton, electron. And then out of that, you're going to have strings down, you know, you got quarks also, but below the quark level, what's a quark made out of? Quarks made out of vibrating strings of energy. Now, let me back up. The difference between the fundamental particle, the difference between the various different particles is that they're vibrating at different frequencies as well as in different ways. And you'll find language like this, tuning forces. So, and again, these are this is not empirical, this is not something you can see under a microscope. These are mathematical terms, but it can move in something called spin, or it can move in something called shake. You may remember the quarks. There's up, there's down, there's strain. These are mathematical differences. But the idea here is these vibrating strings of energy can vibrate mathematically in a variety of different ways. And those different ways give you a lot of different realities. These strings then combined in different ways to form the fundamental particles and forces in nature. String theory, and this is important, string theory does not try to deal with the nature of space and time. We get to LQG, we'll revisit this. All string theory is concerned about are the four fundamental forces of the standard model and how we make sense of them, trying to link that back to gravity and to the larger universe. Now, here's the key element. The math of string theory indicates that the graviton, which is the traditional particle of of gravity, here it'd be string theory. The math of string theory indicates that the graviton, which carries the force of gravity and is a part of the theory of relativity, is required for quantum physics. This is where the excitement comes. Mathematically, we've got a link from string theory, quantum string theory, to the larger world, opening up the possibility, and again, at this point, it's just a possibility, that relativity, Einstein's theory of gravity, could finally be linked to quantum physics. And if this is so, this is, in fact, the Holy Grail, the unified field theory, creating a quantum gravity or a theory of everything. This means that string theory has the potential to unlock the secrets of the universe. Black holes, dark matter, dark energy, even the origin of the universe itself. So this is why there's so much energy and excitement around string theory. Now, it comes in a variety of flavors. One form of string theory is known as M theory or membrane theory. And again, this is all mathematical. We're using terms that are visual, but it's mathematical. It tweaks the theory so that the universe is not made up of one-dimensional strings, but of two-dimensional membranes. Everything else is the same. Another form of string theory is known as super string theory. Posits that these strings exist in what are called superposition. It's a quantum term that means that's about the probability wave, that it exists in all possible states, not just one. So it has superposition, and that's just a form of this theory. String theory, let's be clear, is not empirical. It is not experimental. We do not have the technology of this. Currently, it is only mathematical. But again, since Newton forward, math has led the way. Math has been predictive. So a lot of excitement in theoretical physics that we may be onto something here. In order for it to be empirical, it has to be open to experimentation. Currently, we do not have the tools. Some things that I've read basically said that we don't think that we're going to be there experimentally even in 100 or 200 years. It's just, if ever. Would we ever have the technology? We don't know. Now, loop quantum gravity. This is the other one, much shorter. Loop quantum gravity attempts to understand all the forces of the universe. And like string theory, it is a purely mathematical model. And like string theory, it understands the nature of reality as strings or loops of force. But unlike string theory, and here's the big difference, string theory focuses on the quantum properties of matter and energy. LQG does not attempt to deal with the four fundamental forces in the standard model of physics. So this is entirely different. LQG attempts to relate gravity and therefore relativity to the realm of the quantum. The key idea here is that behind LQG is that space and time is quantized. Remember, matter we thought of as being quantized with particles. Light and energy we thought of being quantized with quanta. And the idea here is that space and time itself, and this is mentally a difficult thing to wrap your mind around, quantize. Think of it this way. There are grains of space-time. It posits that the universe is made up of closed strings of gravitational force. These are the loops in the LQG. Loop quantum gravity holds that there is no background lattice or container to the universe. And just buckle your seatbelt. The loops of gravitational force are the underlying reality of space-time. Grains of space-time. In other words, these loops do not exist in space. They are space. And time does not exist in the universe. Rather, time, the language is, emerges from or emerges out of these loops. These loops of gravitational force are the fundamental building blocks of space-time. They are the structure of reality. Fabric of space and time. Here's somebody just did a lot of links together, little keychain links, and trying to give us some type of a visual image we might relate to. The fabric of space-time is not continuous. It is granular. It is qualified. These loops. As with energy and matter, space and time have irreducible lumps that cannot be subdivided. There's a bottom level you can't get beyond. There is a size limit to what you cannot begin beyond. Now, this chart is probably the most radical thing in tonight's presentation. At the Planck scale, which is the smallest scale physics can conceive of, both space and time are discrete or granular, made up of n-dimensional quantum. Now, what does that mean? Well, look at here where we are. Up at the top of the chart, we're a person, you know, to the zero power. Think of moving from where we are to the size of the universe. I think Al and Thomas said 80 billion light years. Okay, here's the mind blower. If you move in the other direction, if you move downward, the matter, it's even a greater difference going down than going up. For example, an atom is 10^-9. Atomic nucleus is 10^-15. Look where the Planck scale is, 10^-35. Remember, these are factors of 10. It's inconceivable how far down it goes. That's what we're dealing with. Another difference is that unlike string theory, the math of LQG does not require higher dimensions. This is significant. For LQG, all you have to have is the three spatial dimensions and the one dimension of time. And by the way, mathematicians like that. Today, these two theories, loop quantum gravity and string theory, are purely mathematical models. I will tell you that right now, string theory is the prevailing theory. It is the most popular. But loop quantum gravity, at least according to some things I read, is gaining ground. It's still the minority view, but it's made some progress. Again, be clear, there's not one shred of observational or experimental evidence to support either of these. They're purely mathematical models, but math points the way. It may be generations before we have the technology to test either of these. Here's a little chart to end with. Just remind yourself that the basic kind of differences, you know, string theory on the left, LQG on the right. One wants to unify the four fundamental interactions. The other wants to give a theory of gravity and space-time. Anyway, I'll kind of leave that with you. So, woo, that's